You may know that the War of 1812 was a difficult and unpopular war. Many felt that it was a war of expansion, the United States becoming an empire by acquiring Canada and British territories in the Caribbean, the United States plundering, looting, burning the capital of Upper Canada, destroying the legislative buildings in York, an unthinkable desecration that would in later years be compensated for by the British in the burning of the White House. Our democracy, it was argued, was imperiled by the desire of a few to become ourselves an empire. Others argued against the War of 1812 on different grounds. William Ellery Channing, among many other liberals, preached against the war on ethnic and religious grounds. To Channing, the United States was born of Britain, born of Protestantism. To go to war against our mother, to ally ourselves with a power that spoke a foreign language, French, and practiced a foreign religion, Catholicism, was to betray our national ethnicity. Thank you, Mr. Channing. The war itself ended in a stalemate. None of our military and expansionist ends were achieved. We secured an agreement with Britain ending the practice of seizing one another's maritime crews for military purposes, but there was no victory, despite terrific cost. There had been, however, certain advances for Maryland in the pursuit of war, most notably in our national investment in a navy. Following the end of hostilities, ships and crews were available to protect U.S. merchant interests, especially in our trade with the Caribbean and with Africa. And international trade would be ready to flow following its several years' interruption by maritime war. Now, nature played a challenging role in the post-war period. Half a planet away, in April 1815, the skies were blackened over Indonesia when the most extensive volcanic activity in a millennium occurred with the eruption of Mount Tambora. It would take a year, but airborne ash would turn 1816 into the poverty year, the year when there was no summer. A very late frost would kill the spring plantings of 1816 in Canada, in New England, in the mid-Atlantic. No crops would be harvested that year in great portions of the northern hemisphere, and the diminution of vegetation in the eastern United States and Canada and western and central Europe would lead to malnutrition and deaths of livestock. For humans, too, there would be malnutrition and starvation, a rise in epidemics and mortality, a profound increase in human misery. In the fall of 1816, in the aftermath of poverty year, a group of Baltimoreans invited the minister of King's Chapel in Boston to come to Maryland. King's Chapel was the first congregation in the United States formally to adopt a Unitarian theology, and Reverend James Freeman would present a series of lectures on liberal religion in a rented hall. These lectures brought together a number of people who were accustomed to a liberal approach to their Christian faith, and a circle of interest began to form about the founding of a theologically liberal and institutionally independent congregation. And so our church came to be on February 10th, 1817. The organizer of our church was Henry Payson, president of Union Bank, chair of the Susquehanna Channel Canal Commission, and a member of the Committee of Vigilance and Safety that had organized the defense of the city against British attack in 1815. The people who were attracted to the Circle of Founders included people in Payson's social orbit, merchants, bankers, insurance brokers, attorneys, judges. This group was interested in investment for return, in the free exchange of the profits of labor and the free exchange of ideas, in meeting face to face and eye to eye. You see, part of the challenge of the War of 1812, as I think about it, was a struggle between those who saw our future in an aristocratic tendency that was rooted in landed estates and a hardened caste system with hardened rules for people, and those who saw our future in industry and productivity, in the free exchange of our capacity, in our social mobility and our general productivity and opportunity. On the one hand, an old landed gentry might look at the upside, if you will, of relationships of accountability and privilege in a system with a top-down relationship between those who ruled, who might be learned and ethical and benevolent, and those who needed to obey and needed to be taken care of. But on the other hand, the merchant class of First Unitarian saw the world as a place of exchange. I offer what you might buy. I profit from my work in delivering something you require. The marketplace will be a place of opportunity, and likewise, society itself will create opportunities for social improvements like the Susquehanna Canal, where all of us will benefit due to the exercise of control by a publicly created business relationship, that is, the state-created monopoly that built the canal, but which will have a public purpose. That state-created monopoly has a public purpose that uplifts us all and also allows for some private financial gain. Our church was founded with some of the liberal thought that had been developed in Boston in the late 18th century, but unlike the church in Boston, unlike our co-religionists in Boston, our church was not founded out of a standing order of congregational churches that ran things in New England. In New England, our forebears controlled politics and economics and culture as an oligarchy. No, our church was not founded out of the topmost people who ruled everything. Our church was not founded out of the landed gentry of Plantation, Maryland. No, this church was founded with an entrepreneurial, inventive, civic-minded congregation from the very start. And our founders looked around the world and saw opportunity. We see opportunity. Imagine a devastating war where we almost lost our country, a stalemate militarily but an advance in terms of mercantile flexibility on the seas, a world that has been starving, a world that has been starving, but an economy that had been willing to invest in modes of transportation that, in spite of famine, will get whatever Pennsylvania crops are going to grow to the Chesapeake and to the Port of Baltimore and to the world. The country was struggling and suffering and starving, and our people, our entrepreneurial people, are willing to move our families to another place and seek opportunities. People founded this new kind of church. Henry Payson was a merchant who had become a banker. He invested in the people around him and the projects that they were willing to undertake. He took risks with his own money and that of his investors and depositors. He played a social role in the defense of his city and its future. He served this community on its city council. He served as a judge in Orphans Court, and he brought together his friends to found, with a public purpose, this church. Catherine Evans reminds us of the building that you can no longer see. It's around us, it's above us, but you can't see it anymore except in your imagination. Above this vaulted ceiling is a great dome, lifted up into space by four profound, tall, strong arches. These, at the intersection of this dome, on top of these grand arches, are four triangular pedantives. You can see them in your imagination. Just imagine. There they are. There they are. These pedantives were adorned with four emblems representing tolerance and unity and fortitude and peace. That's the foundation that those entrepreneurs left to us. Tolerance. We respect the differences that we discover with one another. We respect and expect that there's going to be some freedom and latitude and difference. And tolerance is a key virtue for us. But unity as well. Because in spite of our differences, we prize our unity. We prize our ability to be with one another, one church, with a social purpose. Fortitude. Oh my God. We have the strength to endure difficulty. This church was born in the midst of difficulty by people who could see beyond the difficulty for opportunity. Fortitude is at the center of who we are. And peace. Peace, which is our desire, our end, our assurance that in the hurly-burly of the marketplace, in the stress of production and construction and maybe even human progress, in the challenge of showing leadership in society, we may abide with a deep sense that things are right with the world, that peace may reign in our social relations, that peace may be discovered, maybe even in our hearts. I believe the work of our congregation today continues to be a work that is entrepreneurial, that is risk-taking, that is reveals a willingness for all of us to choose something together that's going to be meaningful for us and for Baltimore. I think of the many projects that we're working on and the many recent things that we've done. When our Committee on Shared Ministry offered the name of Susan Dunham to be an affiliate minister, it was approved by our board. And Susan is about to be working with us, embarking on new opportunities with adult religious education, and even beginning an alternative worship service that's centered around poetry and song, about dance and biography, a chance for us to be together and worship with one another in another way. We look at the fact that not everybody can be here on a Sunday morning, and we don't see a problem, we see an opportunity. When I think of the work that's being done by our neighborhood circles who When we came to a place of having challenges about the budget and an inability to hire somebody to run coffee hour, our neighborhood circles saw an opportunity to jump in, to show leadership, maybe even to have a little competition between this neighborhood circle and that neighborhood circle about who had the best whatever. But we saw this as an opportunity for us to own our own church, to own our own hospitality, and to extend into the community our own hearts. And when I think of Joe, who has been collecting with the Social Action Clearinghouse the clean and still useful used clothes that many of us have, to see him and others categorizing those, sorting those, determining what our Social Action Clearinghouse people are going to give directly to people who are cold, and what's going to be sent to agencies to be so distributed. There are people who are looking at the challenges around us and seeing more than problems, seeing opportunities. I believe that the faith that we have inherited requires of us that we continue to look in an inventive, an experiential, and in a risk-taking way at the world around us and see the opportunities for our liberal faith to break through in the work that you and I do based on our great pillars of tolerance, of unity, with fortitude in the pursuit of peace. Blessed be.